Welcome to the Healing Ourselves, Heals Our Hoods podcast with your own Desiana Torres. This is a place for humbled, open, and transparent conversations with members of our own community. Here you can find diverse testimonies of the oppression and trauma faced on both individual and community levels. Do you want to validate the suppressed emotions you've never had the opportunity to speak about? Interested in breaking the silence? Then let's validate all that you feel right here, right now on this podcast. Let's go. So what's good, everyone? Thank you again for tuning in to this month's series. This is a new series that we are starting, and I'm super excited to be able to host this space for y'all, but more so to be able to continue to have special guests who are willing to share their life experiences. So if you're tuning in now, you're probably tuning in on my IG live, or you're listening live or listening to the recording that is going to be posted here on Healing Ourselves, Heals Our Hoods podcast. So before we get started, because I know today's going to be a real serious conversation that my heart has been ready for a couple months, maybe for a couple, like maybe a year really, but just some stuff that I feel like definitely needs to be discussed. I definitely want to acknowledge that what we are going to share today, y'all, is going to be real. So we're going to need y'all support, y'all love, y'all investments, like being able to just utilize the chats. And then also sharing y'all life experiences too, if y'all really connect to what we're saying. And so the topic that we are going to be talking and discussing about today is educational racism and oppression. But more so specifically today, we're going to be talking about navigating through oppressive and racist institutions with a forced resilience. So I want to explain what forced resilience is a little bit, because I feel like we hear resiliency all the time and it's such like a strength for us to have. And I definitely agree, you know what I mean? Like being strong and overcoming things is definitely something to be proud of. But what about the moments where we're continuously forced to be strong? You know what I mean? Like we have to continue. It's like, yeah, we want to be strong, but we don't want to be have forced to be strong all the time. So that forced resiliency is that main focus of the conversation that we're going to be hosting today. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. I'm going to introduce our special guest. He is someone that I met my first year in grad school, and he came into our classroom and he was like, I was actually joining an internship called Student Success, and he was a part of the M3 program. But he came in and came so real and so vulnerable with his conversations, the way he talked, and I just really connected to him because he was not sugarcoating nothing, y'all. Like he was for sure just giving it to us like it was. And that's what made me connect to him, because I'm kind of the same way. Like, I like when information is provided and it's real and it's raw and it's uncut. And so I'm so excited for David, who's also known as Chino, to be such a special guest, but more so be such an advocate for the changes that we want to see in our education systems. So to introduce him a little bit, he's a poet. Many know him as an artist, also a photographer. He's an activist who has completed a double bachelor's with a minor as well. He's also completed 90% of an MSW, right? So he almost there. He almost at that finish line. And he's currently working within the mental health field. So that field is truly essential. The work we do, we're almost like just as essential as like doctors and stuff like that. Because mental health, y'all, is so real. Chino's focus is to bring awareness to his community and those around him by helping people find their strength and seeing their beauty and also creating purpose within their struggles. So he's focused on bringing healing, understanding as a first generation low-income disadvantaged person of color in any given system. He is the founder and advocate of the Third Self Movement, and Third Self Movement, which is defined as the process of healing and returning to the genuine self after an experience of trauma. So Chino, I know you are on here live. I know we have a couple of folks in here. Hi, everybody. We really appreciate y'all joining. I'm going to go ahead and invite our special guest. Chino, go ahead and join right on in for our folks.
Hello? Mic check. Can y'all hear me?
Hey, I hear you. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I was on my earphones, but it disconnected.
It's all right.
I'm coming live from my little rental from the whip. How you doing? How's everything? I know you're, how long?
8.5 months pregnant. So.
You ready to pop,
yeah,
bro.
I'm right at the finish line. Talking about 100% there with your MSW. but you know, I just want to appreciate you for being a special guest podcast. I do live because I know that conversation that we had at that beach one day, I'm going to get a little bit more into it, was something that I felt like we both needed. And so just to give a little background to folks who are listening, Tino and I both experienced some fucked up shit in our master's program that really had to put, like, what is the purpose of having programs that are just as oppressive as the systems we're trying to disrupt? And so Tino and I met at the beach, and it was so real and vulnerable because we were both in a place of like wanting to give up, but also still having that fight in us to be able to be like, nah, we're going to speak up for folks who are like us so that they don't have to experience those same forms of oppression, to begin to open up those conversations that not a lot of people have. And so I know that that beach, that when we met up at the beach, we not only talked about the trauma, but we also engaged in, you taught me how to embrace the nature around us. You taught me how to embrace every side when we turned and like just listened to the waves and connected to the water. And I feel like this conversation is going to be just as therapeutic as what that experience was for me. So I'm really, really appreciative of you being here.
Well, thank you. I don't know if you can still hear me. I just logged onto my earphones. But yeah, to take it under account, like a safe space, right? Being able to have these conversations in a safe space. Right now I'm in my car. My car is like, to everybody, I don't know if everybody takes it under account. You're usually alone when you drive home after any situation, and you're forced to deal with those thoughts, right? Some people like to put on music and ignore it, look at the world around them. Sometimes we go on autopilot when we jump into our car. So to me, I'm like, what's a better place than, you know, because I know last time we've done lives and everything, I've been in my room, I've been in front of my library, and I'm just like, I don't feel comfortable at home right now. Or I don't feel like that would be a open space for me to be like, okay, let's have this conversation. So I'm in my car, love rental. So I'm ready to jump into it. Whatever questions y'all have, I will be writing stuff down just so I can remember, because, you know, when you're on go mode, you forget about stuff. So I'm just like, but definitely having a conversation of.
Yeah, no, that's so real. The spaces that we create are very important to how we feel too. So I'm glad that you chose a location to connect to. And I feel you being in your car is so therapeutic. You know, folks who be like, I'm happy y'all pull up to the house after work and you like sit in the car for extra 30 minutes.
Let me not go inside right now. I'm good.
Like, I'm too. So I just want to appreciate all the folks that are joining. See y'all. We appreciate y'all. So the first thing that I have for you is, there is known to be low representation for members or experts. I like to call them experts, right? Who occupy spaces where sit. So how can this describe the impact of, like, maybe imposter syndrome that students may experience in these spaces?
You're cutting off a bit, but I did read, like, didn't know that outline of that question. So before I get started, right, I'm going to speak from the heart. Something my mentor told me, speak from the heart so we can listen from ours, right? And I don't know how you took that. But to me, this mentor, she's meant a lot. And she's the one who's actually one of those people who I looked to when I was in higher education or in these educational spaces. And even going through work now, too, because she's a licensed therapist. So she's at LCSW now. Shout out to Maxine. And everything she tells me that goes on at work, right, or goes on even when we were in school. In education, she's, I don't know what her upbringing was, but to me, it didn't matter, right? To me, if she showed up with love and help me navigate through this, through my trauma, through my experience. I remember I was going through my own situation, and she was the first one who pulled me to the side and asked me, are you okay? How are you doing? Check in. And she's one of many, right? One side where it's like, I don't know her background, I don't know how she grew up. She grew up around this gang mentality, around these traumas, around these specific Now, with people who do have the experiences, right? Thank you for the question.
Yeah.
Now, when we do grow up around these experiences, we navigate these spaces different. We walk into them and we show up different. We show up a little, sometimes a little too rough around the edges, sometimes a little too genuine, a little too direct, right? To me, sometimes I get called out, hey, that's disrespectful. I'm sorry, there's no other way. I know how to say it, right? Because if you go to the neighborhood and you say some stuff like this, they don't bullshit. They're not gonna take it, right? So this, the low representation when in communities of color or in higher education is needed. And there's little of us because a lot of people assimilate. A lot of people sell out. A lot of people give up. Like I was just talking to one of my clients yesterday. He's like, hey, like, thank you for speaking to us when I'm doing groups, right? Thank you for bringing up, mentioning it or translating for us in Spanish. And I'm like, how many Spanish speaker presenters are here, right? Like, I understand I'm in this position because I was able to go to college and study and be here to help you all. They're like, there's not a lot. And most of them, some of them are Latinos. And I'm like, damn. So even forgetting your language, right? Even forgetting where you come from, forgetting the roots, forgetting whatever it may be, it falls once you touch the systems. And there's a lot. It happens a lot. And there's no judgment, right? I know we understand we don't all speak. Spanish isn't even our language. It's not even our native language. So, but being able to use it so we can help out our communities is needed.
I appreciate you so much. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and now I saw the imposter syndrome that impacts the students of color. If it impacts us out in the community, for sure it's going to impact how we learn, right? I've had so many mentors throughout the years that have understood where I come from. And even they would tell me, like, you have to suck it up, unfortunately, right? You have to let that forced resiliency that you mentioned. You have to force yourself to be able to stay quiet, to be able to not take it offensively, to be able to shut up for a minute, because these are policies. This is the way the system is run. And people can apply it to jobs nowadays too, because it's exactly like that. Like going from one system into another, it's still the same. The same structure, the same outcomes, and we're still going to play a part of life. Do I even belong here, right? Do I feel comfortable in this space enough to be who I am? Like, so.
Yeah, and I felt like what you were mentioning, because I feel like they deserve to have that much deeper reflection into it too. Like, you said, sometimes you get to higher levels of education, realize that there's a cost to that. It's not just a huge financial cost that we pay in. We got to probably hustle 2 jobs, 3 jobs, or take out a bunch of loans. But sometimes it's the cost of our culture and of our language. Because what they make it seem like is that those things that we bring forth that make us who we are not inclusive to that space, or not maybe desirable in those spaces that we're occupying. It's too much spicy. It's too much flavor in it, you know? And so I feel like sometimes that does impact the way that we show up in our classes, because I know that you and I were both the students that always had something to say. You know what I mean? Like, we was always in the classroom like, I'm not fucking with that. Like, that don't sound right. And we would switch the voices, not only from the experiences that people were talking about, but because we had that experience personally in the hood. So we were like the experts sitting in the classrooms to represent what it was that we were trying to disrupt and what we saw in the world. I feel that a lot of the times we recognize that a lot of folks are textbook learners. Like, they learned about all the stuff we learned about in a textbook or maybe a documentary. And so oftentimes when we come with that real, you were talking about how sometimes, when we bring it up though, and we're raw with it, and we're called respectful or called too radical or something, and it has nothing to do with us being disrespectful to nobody else. We just sugarcoat it because life ain't sugarcoated for us. So it's that is our language. That is how we talk. So sometimes that does disrupt the way that we show up in class, being able to connect to the material or to our classmates and folks like that, because it makes us feel, ask those questions that you said, like, do I belong here? Because I don't feel comfortable in this space.
And there's so little, like you mentioned, at what cost, right? The cost of our identity overall. Like, so I have a friend who came out of prison, was doing time for murder, and he ended up getting his BA at CSUN and his master's at CSUN. And he pulls me out to the side. He sees me that I would come in, but I'm not taking any classes in Chicano studies. I was already doing my master's. He pulls me to the side and he's like, hey, my boy, I know your name, da da da. I know how you move. I know all this. I don't think you know me yet. Let's take a walk. So we took a walk. We went outside, right? And even that approach, like if you approach somebody like that who's uneducated, right? They're going to get scared. But I'm like, nah, I understand where he's coming from. I feel it. I grew up around gente like this. So I'm like, all right, let's run it. So we took a walk. And taking a walk is like, hey, we're going to get down. But his meaning of let's take a walk is let's have this conversation. Let's dish it out. And he heard about me in the background, that protesting, the activism part, being artists, representing the community, and calling out these policies in the college system, right? And he's like, I heard of you. And he mentioned the term of a red warrior, which is more of an indigenous perspective of you have your people who are from the tribes, right? You have your people who are from your community. And then there's a couple that go out into systems to learn it, so they can sacrifice themselves to that system, because that system is Eurocentric, it's white, it's imposed, right? So you become a red warrior, you get those lines on your chest, you get that blessing where you become the sacrifice. And at what cost, right? Your identity, your culture, your history, your people, your community. And how many of them are actually going to get out? So he came from prison to get into one, to go from one system to another system. He became that, and he broke it down to me in so like layman terms and everything. And it tripped me out ever since then. He's like, are you on your path to Red Road and everything? I'm like, well, I respect it. I was taught about the Red Road, but you know, I follow my religious beliefs. And he's like, all respect. I bless you as a red warrior because you're the sacrifice for our communities. And he just broke it down of you end up becoming the sacrifice in the systems. And anybody who does, when we sacrifice and we go into these different systems, we sacrifice ourselves because it has its own culture. It has its own identity. Whatever your beliefs are, you're sacrificing yourself to bring in what you know and then take what they know and bring it back to our community so we can survive and keep passing on that knowledge, right? Which is, it sucks to be seen as a sacrifice, right? I was called in higher education, I was called while I was doing the master's, when I challenged one of these policies, one of the professors told me, you don't want to be seen as a black sheep. And I'm like, I've been the black sheep, you know, since I was a little kid, I'm okay with that. I laughed in her face and I kept it pushing. And fortunately, we know the situation of that. Right.
Yeah, that's so real. It's like that sacrifice is something that, yes, there is huge accomplishments to that sacrifice, but again, at what cost? You know, having to be the people who are representations of our struggles, of our oppression that we in our own community watched our families continue to struggle with, you know? And so there's a purpose behind us that makes us almost understand that the reason why we're there is not for our own personal. Like, I can't speak for you, but I wasn't sitting in that classroom for me or to show off to the world, like, woohoo, I did it. You know, it was more so of like, damn, my people are hurting. And people keep telling me that these are the spaces where I can gain the knowledge and the wisdom to disrupt and bring that change. And so but then when you sit in those spaces, sometimes it does something to your soul and spirit too. Sometimes it might even kill your purpose and your dreams and your visions that you had before, prior to even sitting in those seats, you know?
Exactly.
You want to validate some of those dreams. Sometimes, you know, I call the education system like, yeah, sometimes we do learn a lot, but sometimes they're dream killers. Because what they do is they highlight that oppression exists even in the spaces that you are being taught to disrupt it into the world, you know? So that goes into the next question, because we were talking about what comes with, you know, being the Red Warrior. And sometimes it does come as being the black sheep or being the person that the school makes an example of to kind of make others not want to stand up and stand firm about, you know, what we're highlighting that's not right in the education system. And so the question I got for you is, in what ways have you witnessed or experienced any form of racism or oppression in higher education?
So unfortunately, I did become the example, right, for my program, for my years and everything. And everybody knows I was fighting hard. I was there to get it. Unfortunately, I ended up becoming the example of the program. They put a, felt like they put a target on my back. I had the target since I began in the program. I remember sitting in the class, and one of the older, he's retired now, one of the professors, he's calling out names, right? I introduced myself. Oh, my name is David. Y'all could call me Chino. And he stopped me in the middle of my presentation, and he's all like, I heard of you. They told me about you. They told me to keep an eye out on you. And I'm all like, it's my first day, first class, first semester in a master's program, and they already know about me. I'm like, what have they been saying? And, you know, having people in that system, they tell you what's going on. Like, okay, yeah, they said this, and they ended up getting me by the end of it, by the end of my, you know, 90% done of the program. They made me an example. But I feel like how I've experienced it, I experienced it since my first year, first semester at CSUN, when I was barely doing my bachelor's. I remember walking on, so I used to wear Dickies, long, you know, pro clubs, and Cortezes or Chucks. And I would stay, since I was dorming, I would stay in the library until they closed, which was like, what, midnight? And I'll be coming out, and I'll still, you know, it's the first time I'm getting a breather. Let me kick it outside. And I'll just walk, because it was impactful being a college student now, coming from the neighborhood, from the community, seeing violence and everything, to a place that's calm, to a place where it's like, damn, you know, who knew? I could experience this. And I have it recorded. I have it in my phone, where the police is passing by and they put their light on me. I'm at the top of the library, and I'm recording it because it happened to me already like 3-4 times. I didn't think nothing of it, but that time I'm like, I'm gonna record this. And they're just like, oh, whatever. They said something to the speaker. I ignore them. I went on my way to the dorm, where it's like, okay, they don't want people hanging out after dark. But it's like, no, why did you really put the light on me? And ever since then, I actually met the captain of that police department at CSUN, because I had to put complaints in. I'm all like, yo, I keep getting stopped and asked by your police officers to show them my CSUN ID. Why? Why? You know, you see the backpack on me. You see me carrying a freaking laptop. Like, why am I getting stopped? Why am I getting asked again and again? And I would play, we call it pachuco, but handball with the little blue balls right there on the side of the building. We'll play occasionally, me and my boys, you know, the ones that also came out from the neighborhood, also had the same stories, also Latino males or Chicano males, and chop it up. Be playing, they come by and stop us. Be like, oh, okay, keep an eye on them, whatever. Be like, we're not hurting anybody. Why would y'all assume, right? We're just here to, and it's just, it's the little microaggressions you pick up on it. The little, then you start getting questioned while you're in classes. Damn, you actually understand this? You're actually smart? You're actually like, I love stumping up, like, I look stupid, I'm gonna be honest. You know, it's that stigma put upon me, but I'm a smart, I'm one of the smart ones, I'm one of the critical ones, and I know it, and I like using it to my advantage, where it's like, oh, I don't know anything, I look dumb, and I'll come with the questions to stump these professors, because it's like, you're trying to teach us something that it's not right, and they'll have to pull me after class, like, you know, I'd appreciate it if you kind of, some professors, they were dope, they'd be like, nah, keep asking them, because you're creating conversation within the classroom now. But some will be like, please don't do that again. Next class, I'll do it again. I don't really care. Like, but it'd be something simple like that. But if I was somebody who was more subtle, more humble, more passive, it would hurt, right? you keep me from ever asking a question again. But I've experienced in a lot into from undergrad into the master's, and I know every single institution is like that.
And having to experience something like that where you're constantly having to prove yourself as even being a student on campus is what highlights when we talk about that our culture sometimes makes us a target. Sometimes we don't know the how we dress, how we talk from where we're from, because we carry that with pride. You know what I mean? To occupy spaces that we make it into that not a lot of folks of us like make it into. It comes with the ability to want to stay authentic, to keep to who we really are. You know what I mean? And so, here, you know, the experiences that you have, like being pulled over, having the flashlight put upon you, that highlights exactly what happens in marginalized communities already. You know what I mean? Especially when it comes to the experience with police officers. All you see is them with the flashlight kind of just pulling up on people who may be just kicking it in the corner or posting it, and they got that flashlight in their face. And I noticed that those are not experiences that happen in privileged communities, you know? And so, when talking about like being made out of, that really stood out because the person in the teacher that I was someone who teachers would call a radical. Like, oh, it's too loud of a student. This student is too, like, disruptive of the agendas that we're trying to put across. Like, this basically the student sees past the bullshit. That's what it was. Yeah. And oftentimes what I recognize and notice is that, like, there was a time when we were in person next year, COVID hit, which was being all on. And the disconnected immediately from Zoom fatigue or whatever it was so overwhelming. No one had their cameras on. Nobody was participating in class. No one was talking. No one was there. And there were times where, like, I was in a class and there was this professor who was like forcing everybody to turn on the cameras and forced like kind of like y'all need to be participating, y'all need to be this. So I spoke up and I'm like, I think what would if we have check-ins in the beginning, because I took my computer, y'all go straight to the agenda, y'all go straight to just going through the class.
They have an agenda.
Right. And so I basically was like, you know, I feel that we need to create space for us to be able to feel and process what we feel and blah, 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 blah. And what the professor did was make an example out of me in front of the whole class. He was like, you know, this is what we should not be doing. Y'all see what he just asked? Like, this is not adaptable. Social workers are supposed to be adaptable to what goes on in the world. And
at the cost of what? Our mental health?
Mental health. Right? And so that really, really bothered me because, number one, it belittled my feelings and it made me feel like I was stupid for even asking that question. And it also discouraged me from speaking up again because I'm like, damn, like, are we supposed to be adaptable? Like, damn, I thought social workers were supposed to be disruptors. I thought we were the ones that were supposed to advocate when they didn't seem to feel right. And so sometimes it's like when we have those folks who are challenging the system, who are speaking about it, you see the way that they're treated, not only within the education system, but within just the different roles that we have in our program in general. And mm-hmm. So for me, when it comes to talking about like oppression in higher education, I didn't graduate on time for the dumbest reason. Like
some paperwork stuff.
Yes, and it was so like in my I really speak upon this as being such an issue that I feel like can continue to ruin the future or the dreams of many of the BIPOC community that are pushing for these dreams and goals. So a little bit of background about that is like I had in early February of last year, one of my housemates basically, who was also in the program, began experience psychosis. It hallucinated. Then it almost went to this stage of like they were diagnosed later on with something with a very serious mental health disorder. But what was happening when we were held in our house for and to almost witness the person hallucinate and kind of go through, you know, schizophrenia. Like, you know, it's a real experience. And so it's a very challenging experience as well. And so we reached the school for help. We were like, oh, we need your help. We need assistance for this. We need assistance for that. You know what the school told us? There's nothing they can do. And I'm like,
and they're supposed to be the experts, right, in exactly. that mental health field, I'm in like, that field alone.
That part. And I was so blown off by that because I'm like, how are we, the person, houseman, triggered on the job, and we were supposed to connect to helping people handle their mental health and do all this stuff, but what? How do we take care of ourselves? What platforms or what resources do you have for us to be able to realize when we're triggered or when we're going through stuff? And the school didn't want to test it. But now the only thing they did is like share a flyer when, you know, homeboy went missing. That's the only thing. So then having to be a student who, where I basically, when he went missing, his family didn't have a car. So me and my husband, the one driving around looking for him, almost probably engaging in that. Help us find him. Right? I don't ever ask for help now and let the school know that I need 2 weeks off. So in February, I let the school know, like, take 2 weeks. So that's why they were explaining that there was nothing they could provide any resources or help for. So I asked for 2 weeks off, and I'm like, yo, can I have all my deadlines extended? They're like, yes, of course. Just send an email to all your professors and let them know. I sent an email to all my professors, letting them know. They already knew the situation. I basically letting them know, like, I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks, and can I have this extension? All the professors wrote back except for one professor. But I'm like, all right, but it's cool because the school already told me that I'm good. I'm good with the deadlines. And I come back 2 weeks later, and this is when we are, you know, if you're in a master's program, there's this important project that you need to graduate. It's called the Capstone. And the Capstone is like this huge research project that you actually conduct within yourself or with a partner. And so me and my partner finished 30 pages worth of we had already finished. And so what I was missing was I didn't turn in during those 2 weeks gone. I didn't turn in the piece of paper that said who was going to grade my paper. Like, that was it. What was that?
Your committee?
Yeah. That's the only thing that I missed is I did not turn in the paperwork of who was going to grade it. And so because I didn't do that, they told me I can't graduate. And I'm like, what? I showed up every day during the pandemic, whether my mental health was gone, my grandmother had passed away during the pandemic. Like, I was showing up facing like all these mental health issues or struggles that were happening around me, still showing up, still participating in class. And y'all telling me I can't graduate because of one piece of paper that just said who was going to grade my project. And so what I did is I reached out to the entire school. Like, I reached out to, I tagged everybody in the email, and I'm like, y'all, like, this ain't right. And they're like, oh, it's the policy. And I'm like, how are we placing policies over people? When the whole school knew what I was going through, y'all told me that it was okay to take this 2 weeks off, that everything would be extended. They're like, yeah, everything but that. And I'm like, so what's communication, right? And so basically, there was nothing they could do, that I would have to pay another $2,000 and stay for a summer session to basically finish off, even though all the work was done. And it just really highlighted, because I'm like, damn, like, y'all really be pushing us in this program to think that, like, our voices could really go out and disrupt change. We can really enter into spaces of oppression and disrupt it and bring forth the change that we all know and envision in our minds and in our souls. But I can't even change my graduation status within the same program that know this shit.
It's a policy thing. I'm frustrated. Like, I smile just because, you know, my story, right? They exemplified. I had to. So the day it, to go based off of yours, right? I had to get myself diagnosed with severe PTSD so I could show the same professors that know about mental health on why I shut down, why I don't communicate, why I deal with my issues and my problems at home or my community the way that I do when I'm hiring in higher education. I've had friends pass away every single year since I was in college. Well, since I was 9, I've dealt with death. I have, right, I've shared this with you, right? I have a tattoo on my left hand of a rose. I add a thorn every time. For me to remember my friends, I add a thorn every time somebody passes away. To remind me, it's another thorn on my rose, another motivation, another reason why. And I've learned how I deal with death now. I throw myself into becoming busy. I just become busy. I shut down. I don't communicate with people. I know that. I understand that. It's a symptom, right? A symptom of my experiences of having PTSD, of growing up in the neighborhood and having friends pass away and dealing with trauma. And it happened those 2 years that I was in college. Once I started college, I had a friend pass away. I shut down. It was my first classes, everything. I shut down. I didn't have money for books. I didn't have anything. I'm just trying to take care of that. Professors would reach out. I'm good. I'm okay. Like, unless I really trusted somebody, right? I talked to them about, but it was rare. So speed it up. It happened again during my last year, and I shut down. I did. And I already had the diagnosis. They overlooked that. They're like, he's a disruptor anyways. Let's just go ahead and not pass him. I was told I was supposed to return 3 years later to complete the program. I went back earlier this year. They told me I was never supposed to wait 3 years. I could have returned the following semester. And now I have to deal with all these policies where it's like, oh, you haven't been here for 3 years. You have to go through this. And maybe if you hit the 3-year mark, you're going to have to restart the program all over again. And so that same frustration comes about, but I'm just like, I'm going to leave it in God's hands. However it goes about, you don't mess with God's people. Like, I'm chilling. But it's just when you're going through it, you lose faith. You don't have people to lean on. You don't have people to look to. You don't. These policies are held over your head. And on top of that, being the disruptor, being the black sheep, you're like, damn, I should have just stayed quiet. And I feel like now I'm playing the chess game. Now I'm going to stay quiet. But when I finish, I'm going to be at their level. I'm going to go up, try to get the LCSW and match them and show them how it's done, right? I know it's going to take some years, but it's going to get done. It's going to get done regardless. I leave it in God's hands. It is what it is. But that frustration that you felt of like, damn, y'all are telling me I could do this, but because of this, I can't now. It doesn't match. It's still a system at the end of the day. It's still a white system. They still play by rules, policies, all that stuff. And they don't want people like us in it, talking for them, because we're going to help out. See, this is, if we go back to being, having imposter syndrome, when we go into higher education, the cost to play is our identity. And then you have our own people who get into these positions of power and they become the key holders and the gatekeepers, now keeping their own out. So it's like, because I was going to ask you, like, could you name drop the initials of that professor, right? Because I'll probably remember, I'll probably know who it is. And some people who are on here who are also graduates from that same program, from CSUN MSW, will probably freaking know, like, yeah, we've had students exactly like y'all that it happened to, that they got screwed over. And some of these professors are professors of color. But what are they? They're gatekeepers. They keep us out. They keep us from being, just reaching that. Like, all I want to do is help out my community. I just want to be a therapist so I can help out the same people who I saw suffering every single day of my life. I want to be able to help out the same kids who look exactly like me that grow up with PTSD. And they don't know how to take care of it. And it's just, you know, like whenever I mention it, I'm about to tears because it's y'all should understand. Y'all should understand, if we were playing by rules and policies and you went to the community and actually looked at the community where I'm coming from and where I want to go back, you'd be chin-checked right now because you're not accepted. They're like, they they resemble that same institution that's keeping us out. And it's just, I'm glad you graduated. You got the 3 letters behind your name, right? I'm still trying to get it, and I'm gonna get it. I guarantee it. I guarantee it. I put it on anything is gonna happen. Mark my words.
Yeah, there's no word, there's no doubt in my mind that it. And I think what is like important to highlight is that the fact that the program itself come back for 3 years. You have to wait 3 years to come back. And you just found out this year that that was true, that you came back the next semester. And that's the kind of things that we're talking about when it comes to different forms of oppression that even people of color face in the education system, is that we're not always given the truth. And sometimes we're given the truth that they feel will best favor their program to keep us out. Because in those 3 years, what that does is it kills our spirit sometimes. It makes us question, is this even the route for me? Like, I know that there's a need and a higher purpose for me to be able to understand these tools and techniques that I learned in the program to take back to my community. But at the cost of what? Because like you said, being the black sheep and being the folks who have to endure the most sacrifices comes at a cost of our own mental health too. And when we are out there providing so much care to the world and having to provide so much therapy to everybody else during a pandemic, who was catching us? You know what I mean? And I love that you also brought up like your personal experience with being diagnosed with PTSD, because when if you live and you raised in the hood, most likely there are some, diagnoses of PTSD from a lot of folks. And that's just a lot of the trauma that we have had to face. And so how we exist, how we cope, all that's different from the rest of the world who have those life experiences. And so what I notice is that a lot of education systems are always like hella pushing for like, we diverse, we hella diverse, we this, we that, we tell diverse. Like, well, we want the folks who are different. But then when we get to those spaces, what I notice is they fail to be inclusive to those life experiences that come with our existence and our being. Because what we're representing is a whole world that people are only really learning about in textbooks, because our people, there's so many policies in place that prevent our people from even making it into the seats that we're sitting in. You know what I mean? And so,
Like I mentioned, right? Like this skin color is gold covered in dirt. And what do you get with that gold? It's you get dirt, you get the struggle, you get the pain, you get the trauma, you get everything that comes with it. You can't just take the person, set them up, take a picture, right? And we've been used as pawns. Like shout out to Colombina, Natalie. I think y'all have met, or I don't know if I've met y'all, but I've introduced y'all. She's also a poet, very well known. I give her a special shout out because we have this same. So we're both used as pawns by higher education. We're both taking pictures. Let me use your story. Let me put it out there. Okay, cool. But what are you gonna do to help me at the end? And those people end up turning their backs on you. They just use your face just to post it up, just to spread it out, just to outreach because they know that with your image, they could get into those communities. But yet they don't help you. They push you to the side, and it's like I've seen it. Like I've seen it, and in person, I've had the conversations of like, why? And it happened to me to an extent. I'm not bashing on any program, but it's happened. And I'm just like, now what? Now what? Where are you helping me out to reach the end goal? Like you're not. You just wanted, it just happened. And it's sad fact. I've had the experience of having one of these mentors, right? That were part of these programs. I remember me and my boy, we needed assistance. We needed like, yo, this needs to happen. We're about to get in trouble. Da da da. We did this stuff without doing the proper paperwork. And we're going to the professor's class, the professor's office, knocking on the door. He's with another male. And he looks at us. He knows why we're there. He's already heard of it. And he was like, you know what? I'll deal with y'all later. I'm helping out somebody else. Somebody who looked more like him, walked more like him. Like they had no connection, nothing. It was their first meeting. 'Cause I asked the kid, I'm like, yo, We can also help you out. Like, what's up? Like, have y'all known each other? Because for him to diss us personally like that, y'all have to have a connection. Like, no, it's my first time meeting him. Like, okay, I understand. I won't take it personal, but I took it personal because it's like, yo, you know, you just wanted to, you know, we're the ones actually helping out, going out there and having no setback on. I'm going to say what I can. I'm going to be genuine. I'm going to be real. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And I understand you're a professor and you can't do that. You're in higher position and you can't tell students to say, screw the system, right? Fuck the system, like move different. And so it's like, yeah, it's just that whole experience and having this conversation. It's a lot.
It is a lot. And I know that these are conversations that need to be spoken about to help validate the experiences of other people. Because when I share like what happened to me in my program and how it really disconnected me from even, you know, the goal of the one to be in that field, hear so many other stories of people experiencing, like, you know, similar struggles with college or also different school programs. You know, it's not all the same program. It's so many social work programs that I've heard so many different oppressive policies that are really preventing the work from being done.
Yeah. So
it really makes it, you know, me question, what are we really, are we false advertising? You know what I mean? Are we false advertising programs really you're supposed to do? Because what happens is that you notice that there's a certain amount of people who can easily avoid all these situations and avoid all the experiences that you and I both had, but at the cost of your identity. So we exactly. See folks sit next to us who maybe lived with raised in a hood too, but they switched up how they dress, how they talk, how they exist, how they see themselves in the world. And they don't really connect to it in a way that allows for them to have pride. Maybe they have guilt from where they're from, so they don't always speak up about it or share about it, you know? And oftentimes what you see is a difference in treatment and how other students are treated, how those who remain off like real to the purpose, like the real and sometimes it is there are professors who look like us who are the ones who were like oppressive in the program as well. There were two particular professors in our program that I was like, damn, I'm hella like tied to them, like I hella connect to them, like where their story is, where they're from, this and that, and
just to find out
that they were one of the folks who kind of just like sold themselves out. And it's really just an image thing for them. It ain't even about the purpose or like going back to the community. It's really just an image thing for them to look like, oh, I'm all high and mighty. But What happens to the folks? So my next question is like, were there any impacts on your mental health based on the oppressive like situations that you had experienced in your program?
Well, obviously being pushed out, being disqualified, whatever it may be, pandemic hit. So that didn't help out. I ended up falling into depression. I understand it was a symptom, but it wasn't a symptom of my diagnosis, right? It was a symptom of the system. So now I'm dealing with the aftermath of getting pushed out, not having people who I believed had my back as professors, turned their back, mentors turned their back. There's nothing I could do for you. So I'm like, okay. I noticed I'm in it alone, but y'all were edging me on when I was sacrificing myself, right? And that mental health, it took me a year and a half, even up to date. I'm still dealing with it, right? I'm still every day trying to heal, every day trying to become a better man than I was yesterday. And I know I ain't perfect. I hella know I ain't perfect. But now it's dealing with it, right? Learning how to heal, not just dealing with it, but learning how to heal. And my cousin, who just got into a program, I believe the MSW at Long Beach, like, I told him, I've been seeing him a lot lately, and I told him, I'm like, honestly, because he goes in there like, nah, I want to challenge this, I want to challenge that. I'm like, honestly, just get, I understand. I've been there, take me as an example, get your stuff and get out. Get your stuff and get out, because when you're at that position, you're able to now become that, and able to actually weed out and do what we need to do. Like, look, they got me at the last 10%. They'll do it to you right away. Trust me. Like, it's difficult. And it's unfortunate that we have to. go through that. We have to deal with our own people now too, right? It hurts even more when it's your own sometimes, and it's unfortunate, but it happens. And trust me, it's the mental health thing isn't every day we heal every day. I still think about it. I'm still just trying to get in. I'm still just trying to get out and come back. And I've noticed that I heal by helping others heal, right? That's why I write poetry. That's why I'm so vulnerable in my poetry. That's why, it doesn't, I have a circle of my boys and we check in with each other. And some of them are therapists, some of them are getting the doctorates, some of them are, coming straight from the neighborhood and just trying to make it. And we check in on a daily. Some of them are educators, teachers, and now we're trying to heal each other. I'm like, you know what? I can't do this alone. I can't heal on my own and go through my own stuff. I'm gonna check in with my boy. I'm gonna check in with everybody around me. And obviously, when I go through my own, I still have the symptoms of PTSD. So I know that I isolate, and that's it's an everyday thing. It's an everyday thing.
Yeah, that depression that you were explaining is so real, because I too, like, I experience, of not having anyone advocate for me, and it felt like I was fighting everyone. I was fighting the program, I was fighting the graduate studies, I was fighting almost the policy itself to be able to be like, yo, like, are we not noticing that these policies are really impacting? Because they said a lot of students basically like get impacted by this one particular policy. And I'm like, so what are we doing? Because accepting that it's policy over people, you know what I mean? And the response that I received was basically, yeah, it is policy over people. And you just have to accept that. Like, you get stuck at there's nothing you can do. There's nothing we can do. It's like, oh, well, our hands are tied. Like, it is what it is. And so what that does to what it did to my mental health is it also put me in a deep depression. Like, I was so confident before even entering that program on who I was and what I was able to do and the confidence I had in speaking up for myself and also speaking up for others and creating spaces for like protests, but also for vulnerability for students to be able to share, to now being somebody who can share in a dark space because I felt like I lost all of it. Like, that school, that program really took away my confidence in myself, because being the person who they try to make the example out of, you feel like you lose. You feel like, in order to, said in order to finish off the program, you learn that you just got to be quiet and you just got to let, like, kind of ride those waves and be forced to accept that resilience, right? It's that forced resiliency. That's when that comes in, that you're just forced to kind of just be strong and withhold everything with that experience, because that's the way the system always is. That's the way it's always existed. And
Exactly. And it's I also believe, right, like we have understanding mental health, that we have waves, right? Life comes at us in waves. When we feel at the most top, we're gonna hit the bottom eventually. It's gonna come, something's gonna happen, right? And that maybe that's a our assumptions of life just going off from how we did. But to me, it's always been true. Like, okay, if I'm so high up here now, I'm gonna hit the bottom. So now I'm like more appreciative of being at the bottom. And I was able to create like a movement, right? Their self movement. The first one, it's your genuine self, who you show people every single day and what you. The second self is your alter ego, who you wish to become. The third self is trying to become, trying to go back to your genuine self after an experience of trauma. And trauma, it can be anything as small as seeing a random dog get run over by a car, to it hitting you personally, right? And so that's what came out from my depression, where it's like, I'm gonna focus on me. I was, it sucked. It sucked that whole year, year and a half, 9 months. Like, I even stopped working, but then that's when I focused on myself. That's when I'm gonna write poetry for me. I'm gonna try to create something. I had to heal myself to be able to get out of that. And I'm still healing myself to be able to get out of it. And if there was somebody who I could reach out to who looked exactly like me, who understood where I was coming from, what I was going through, I would have been so much better. Because I know there's other people who have gone through it and have gone through their experiences, been pushed out by the program, been pushed out, and it happens at different levels of education or different levels in the systems, right? And just having somebody who looks just like you, somebody who talks like you, moves like you, understands you, alone, it's healing. It's healing. So, like, that's why, I send you blessings. I send you love because you're one of those people. Like, right off the bat, we connected. Like, I fuck with her. Like, this is somebody genuine, somebody who understands. And even though I know you're from Oakland, right? Love from Pacoima, love from the valley, love from way out here. So it's crazy how, even though it's so separate, there's still people out there who understand and feel your pain and are able to push you through it. So I urge everybody to reach out and try to find your tribe. Try to find your circle, somebody who's going to keep you going, somebody who's going to check in and who understands.
Yeah, because you're right. When I had experience, with the school happening, I felt so alone that every time I talked to my parents, like, well, I'm on track, I'm good. You know, there's no one else who were the spoken one in the classroom, kind of disrupting the way they talked. Well, I remember there was brought up when you were like, here, you know, I think it was like, who do you think of those, right? Because that's how they kind of phrase it in our classrooms. Like, oh, enough talking about those people. And you brought up, like, who are those people? Those people are family members. Those people are our sisters and brothers, our homies, our friends, our classmates, like, whoever it is from the neighborhood. And why are we characterizing them in such a way that is not, you know, inclusive to the oppression that we are all here to learn to disrupt? And so I think what's so real about that is that there was one student who knew what the whole school kind of understood what I was going through. And they were like, I'm like, that's hella fucked up. Like, what? But not one person says anything else other than just like reaffirming that that was it, you know? And so there was one person who brought up your name, was like, you know, there's one other student who I know that is experiencing some fucked up shit from the program as well. How? And that's when I reached out to you. And that's when we had that conversation at the beach. And that's the first moment that I felt like I was able to take a breath. That I was like, damn, like, there's one other person who understands what this feels like. Because we can't go to our family members and express that, you know what I mean? Because what we hear, at least what I was hearing, was just keep your mouth closed. Just be quiet. Like, just, I know you got a mouth on you, but you got to just let them be. And, it's that sacrifice of wanting to disrupt and having this passion to disrupt, to being taught that disruption is not something that's going to allow for us to get the degree that we're fighting for. It's being adaptable.
Yeah.
And my next question is, what is, or how can this harm our Black and brown people who are seeking to enter these spaces?
I'm sorry, you cut off.
Oh, no worries. So, the experiences that we're advocating for, maybe the many experiences that many folks on here who are listening who haven't like been able to talk their truth, how do these experiences impact the way that we exist in higher education?
Well, obviously, from sharing our stories, they impact deep, right? One main thing that I would say in regards to advocacy, build your community. Build those that understand you. Like, everybody has different characteristics. But you find those quiet people, sometimes they fuck with you. They you know, they'll look at you and they'll give you that little, go ahead. The Vican, right? Someone like, okay, I got one of those. I got one of those in my circle. Like, most amazing person, show love. And then you have your strategist, you have somebody, like, I learned this organizing for 10 years of my life in communities of color, being involved with different organizations, different programs. I've noticed there's different people, the way they move. So you can have the quiet ones, you can have the loud ones, you can have the violent ones, you can have the ones who don't like violence at all. You can have, but everybody plays a part into being able to create our own system, right? Our own movement, our own healing, our own growth, and find your community. If you feel alone, trust me, everybody else feels alone too. So just let's do it alone together, right? So let's grow alone together and then just reach out, because there's people out there and there's no other way to say it. Regardless, we have to have somebody who becomes a sacrifice. It's a chess game. You got to learn to, and I really got involved with that perspective of learning to play a role. As I was working with veterans during this time when Black Lives Matter movement was happening, I ended up getting shot in the head with a rubber bullet by a cop, and the veterans are the ones who broke it down. What position were you playing at that time? Because you're getting a master's right now. You're working two jobs. You're providing for a family. What position were you playing when you could have been playing a different one? And that's not, it connected, right? They broke down what the different chess pieces mean in society. And sometimes there's people who have to play the pawn. I played the pawn for full 8 years. And now it's time to play a different position, right? I could play a knight. I could play a bishop. I could play the king. I could even play the queen, right? And queen makes more moves than the king does, but the king just runs the board. So it's knowing your position and when to play it. Because if you learn how to play chess, it teaches you about life. And we need those people to challenge the policies. We need maybe not alone, maybe find collective people and be able to challenge them, but they're out there. And that's my little advocacy piece on we're all struggling alone. Might as well do it alone together, right?
I love
And
that. Yeah, I love that. I also love that you also highlighted a little bit earlier that while you were in your place, that's when you connected to yourself the most. And that's when your creative aspects came out of you being able to connect or even allow yourself to heal through your own poetry. But also creating, poems for other folks to be able to connect to and experience their own forms of healing. I think that's so dope because that's also what happened to me. So I know that we was both in those forms of depression at around the same time, and that's when I wrote my book, The Becoming a Herd, which is a poetry book.
as fire. If y'all haven't checked it out or bought it, go right ahead. Trust me. Trust me.
Appreciate
Fire.
that. I appreciate that. That book was me healing myself from all the things that I've understood and was able to kind of put together from my life experiences for it to just make sense to me because I felt like no one else could understand it. And what that book ended up doing was being a tool and technique for many other students who are going through the same thing. And it's like that's what allowed for me to recognize conversations are not only like important or having hosts, but there are folks who maybe are younger, like wanting to get into positions. So we just try to put people up on game, like y'all, this is what it's really like there sometimes. Like, sometimes like it's not gonna be as progressive as as they advertise. And maybe it's not gonna be as inclusive as they make it seem, when they want your diversity. And so what you said was find your people. That's what helped me survive was finding, my circle of people who helped me get through and ride those waves when they got a little too big.
Yeah.
And being able to, like you said, being able, the main goal is there are different levels of work that needs to be done. There's that micro, which is that one-on-one work that we do when we're hosting that therapy spaces. There's the mezzo, which is the community work, the community advocacy that we're creating for those spaces. But what's so is the macro, because the macro is where the policies are existing that are basically being the barriers of holding so many people down. So
Yeah.
what's important for us to do is start learning how to just not speak up about it, but learn how it works. Like you said, it's a chess game. Go in, get your game, and then when you get your degree, now you know how to challenge it in ways that they can't hold your degree over your head no more, or be like,
Exactly.
I get it because this is how, so being able to like you said, play that chess game, play smart, and still being able to be authentic to who you are at the same time. Like, there's no way, shape, or form that we're saying like assimilate and lose who you are, lose your culture. No, hold tight to that. Don't let them, blind you. Don't let any policies take you away from that because sometimes it does happen. But be able to be so in tune with yourself and your purpose, your God-given right to be able to be an advocate in those spaces, even if you are the even if you are the sacrifice, what comes is we open up doors for the next generations to be able to understand and process, better prepare for the battle that's yet to come.
Exactly. And I'm gonna say this directly as too. Once you find your people, some people stick around, some people they don't grow. Like they outplay your part, right? Shout out to all my past mentors. Shout out to the mentors that I don't consider mentors anymore. Just in a whole different life path, but I still got love and respect for every single one of them, right? You got to keep growing daily. You got to keep moving daily. Some people, it's just, you know, it's a mutual respect of I need this in my life. You have it. You need that. And I'm bringing it. So being able to play that part with all love and respect, I'm gonna keep it moving if it goes beyond that, right? It's there's some people who just stick around for your whole life. Like to me, like the people that I met that I probably did that presentation with from M3, I still talk to them and I got mad love and respect for them. One of them's my coworker. One of them sees a therapist now and I work right next to him and you know it's a mad love for my boy. And some people just are meant to stick around. Some people are just there to help you level up. And take it as it is. Don't take it personal, but you got to keep growing because once you grow, everybody else is watching. And they're going to be motivated too. Like, I want to grow too. I want to go too. Let's go. And they're going to move differently. And not every tree is the same, right? Not every seed is the same. Somebody could be a apple tree. Somebody's an orange tree. So it's just what you bring to the table and how we can work together to create, you know, that food for our next generation.
Definitely. That's our goal, to be able to provide those resources. And a lot of us already accept we're not going to be the ones to experience it. But who we push for is for those next, whether it's our kids, our cousins, or even growing up as kids in neighborhoods, so that they can have experience or more access to being able to bring forth that change that we see. And when we are and get those three letters or whatever the degree it is that you push it for, don't allow the spaces that you go into when you start working to also take away from your culture or your identity or how you exist and how you move. Be so creative in your vision. Be so creative in the way that you make that change, and know that that purpose and that vision was given to you for a specific reason, because you're more than capable of achieving it, you know? So, Tino, I want to appreciate you so much for just being a part of this live, of sharing your truth, your wisdom, but more so your vulnerable experiences that oftentimes we don't always hold space for us to be able to talk about. So I really, really appreciate your existence. And I'm going to also allow folks to know that you can follow his pages, that third self, the way he expressed it, the importance of all three different forms, or something that I feel like it's so much deeper than I feel like folks really take in tune with. And so your Instagram is third.self_, correct?
Yes.
Perfect. So go ahead and follow Chino. Follow his pages for his poetry, his other forms of creativity, like you do photography as well.
Yeah.
So his advocacy, because Chino, he 90% done, y'all. So when he get that extra 10%, he only gonna higher than where he is now. Chino, I wish you the best, and I really, really thank you for this conversation.
Love and respect, Mohair. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Appreciate you for the max.
Of course. And to the folks who tuned in, thank y'all so much for being a part of this conversation. We've seen the comments as y'all were typing. We see folks saying thank y'all for creating this space in this conversation. Other folks were saying, like, basically thankful for the gift and us being able to advocate and share a lot of what we were. So, you know, who we do it for is y'all. So we appreciate y'all just even tuning in for us for the last hour or so. And also want to wish and make sure that we all taking care of ourselves, whether that's taking deep breaths after this conversation to help us be present again. But also to remember that, you know, there's still some stuff that we got to change in the world. So may we all come together to be advocates for that together. One love, y'all. We'll talk to y'all soon.
Peace, peace.
Bye.
Thank you again for tuning in with my podcast, Healing Ourselves Heals Our Hoods. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on your notifications for future episodes that will be full of authentic storytelling by members of our own community. You can find me on Instagram at CONFI_DEZ. If you haven't already gotten your copy of my poetry book titled The Becoming of Her, be sure to get yours today. We forget that reading is just as reflective and powerful. I'm sending lots of love and peace and light to you all. May we continue to heal ourselves and each other every day.